Welcome back, everybody, to SF Live. My name is Kai Hoffman. I'm the CEO of the SOAR Financial Group and the @JRMiningGuy on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining us. And we have a company update for you today. It's a company that I'm personally involved in, invested in. I have shares. I have options in the company. So, of course, I'm hugely biased. I want the company to do well. So please keep that in mind when I'm asking questions. But I'm also like asking questions to find out what is happening, what's the company up to. And I have some questions, of course, about the PEA the company just put out. Fantastic PA, great numbers. President Doug Ramshaw, who's our guest today, will run us through it, of course, and we'll be able to answer hopefully most of our questions that came out or came to me while I was reading the PA and some of the analyst reports this morning. Fantastic. Before I switch over to my guest, follow us on YouTube, follow us on Twitter, hit that like and subscribe button, and leave a comment. It helps with the algorithm. We really appreciate it, so more investors can see what is happening with the company and can follow along. Appreciate it. And now, without further ado, let me bring Mr. Doug Ramshaw back on the screen here. Good to see you again. Good morning.
Morning, Kai. I'm even more biased than you, but
You own a few more shares than me, so that's just a few. That's forgiven. No, that's fantastic. I really appreciate you coming on. And I'm actually going to make a quick reference to an interview you've given yesterday, and I think investors should listen to the interview. It's with a good friend, Trevor Hall, just for some more baseline information about the PEA. But before we dive into some more detailed questions, Doug, can you give us an overview of the PEA and the PEA numbers that came out yesterday?
Yeah, no, we were delighted to put out something. I think it's more actually of a conventional mine for us rather than a classic bootstrapped approach. I mean, it's an 8-year, close to 60,000 ounce a year mine. Low cost in this environment, not just to build at sub 30 million US capex, but also op cost wise. I mean, life of mine with sub 900 ASIC. I think most importantly, those first 4 years with sub 800 ASIC. And all these costs have been informed by our experience in building the Santana mine, which have come into play. So yeah, really excited to shine a light. And I say that as the sun is starting to, light me up unnecessarily. Shine a light on what is, I think, a game-changing asset and project for Minera. And very happy with the market reception to the news. It's not often you see in this at any time, but certainly this last year, any economic study be favorably received by the market. And I think that speaks to why it's the perfect kind of low capital project for this inflationary environment that we live in right now.
No, absolutely. Let me just run through some KPIs here. Gold production, roughly 60,000 ounces a year, 8.2 mine years mine life, extremely low strip ratio of 0.3:1. Rare to see that. All-in sustaining costs over the life of mine is $873 per ounce US, or $763 actually in the first 4 years, because it's a little higher grade, and I think it's just a smidge higher though, but it's a massive impact on costs, I guess.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the strip ratio, I think the first 2 years we're at 0.2:1. So when I've described this project in the past as a giant earth-moving exercise, it genuinely is exactly that. So that coupled with the Mexican cost structure allows us to mine a grade which I think people would struggle with in say the Great Basin of Nevada. But in many ways, you and I have spoken in the past about when the team built El Castillo under the Castle Gold banner. I mean, this is remarkably similar as the project, except when Darren built that one, the grade was pretty much the same at 0.37. The strip ratio was about 1.5:1. And they had half the starting resource, and yet that turned into a plus 100,000 ounce a year mine. And just coming to its end of life now after about 15 plus years. So this project has all the hallmarks of kind of an El Castillo, but better in our opinion, and certainly has that expansion potential beyond the 8-year life that we laid out in this base case PEA.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And let's come to some of the questions I have actually about the PEA. And let's start off with the CapEx, actually, $28 million. You're using a fairly high contingency of 30%. Like I'm more used to seeing 15, maybe 20% contingency in PEAs or even in general, even feasibility studies. Why'd you choose 30%? And why the variability? How secure are you in the PEA numbers? Like meaning, like how confident are you in those numbers that you use such high contingency?
I think like I watched that great interview you did with Joe Mazumdar the other day, and Joe, I think, sums up PEAs better than just about anyone when he says a PEA, a project never looks better than when it's presented in a PEA. I think we have always taken, like the Fortuna PEA in 2018, a conservative approach to it, where we're applying, I think, stricter controls on our PEA. Part of that is we will be building this one off this PEA. So the degree of detail that we've gone into power or our CapEx is very much informed by Santana. So we won't use the, I imagine even in this inflationary environment, we will not be anywhere near that 30%. But I think it's important when presenting a project in its first iteration of an economic study to err on the side of being conservative. So there's no harm in adding a 30% contingency in there. And there would be no harm if we used all of that contingency. It's still a remarkably low CapEx project. But I think it, like anything in this business, it's better to be conservative and then out deliver on that.
Absolutely. And I think if very few people have that track record you have in actually delivering on that promise as well. You mentioned you bought the crushing plant in the past already. Is that factored into the PEA cost and the CapEx, or was that should that be added on actually as part of it later on to get the total
No,
CapEx number?
we bought that plant for about $1.5 million, I think 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. Part of it we thought we might use at Santana. In the end, we used contract portable crushing material equipment from the contractor there, which makes all of that plant, all of the components of it available, which parts we want and which we don't for Cerro de Oro. And no, we've factored in some refurbishment of that plant for our purposes at Cerro de Oro. I think there's about a $2 million allowance in there, but the plant's been bought, and in reality, this is a largely run-of-mine operation. So 70% of material mined is going straight to the pad, and roughly 30% will go through two-stage crushing and then be conveyed to the leach pad. And we have all that equipment now, which was it was a smart acquisition a couple of years ago because we knew we had this pipeline of projects. We weren't entirely sure which components of that plant would be used where. And then 6 months after buying that plant, we bought Cerro de Oro, and we started thinking it's going to be perfectly suited for our plans at Cerro de Oro.
Yeah, fantastic. And baseline for the PEA, obviously, is the resource update that you put into the press release here as well. Run us through the resource real quick, and what have you done to improve the resource from back in 2020 when you originally calculated, or when it was last calculated?
All we did was there's not been additional drilling, but we have looked at we wanted to base this project on what we felt was a discount to consensus forward-looking gold prices. And I think those forward-looking consensus gold prices are north of 1600. We use 16. It's informed by a $1,700 pit shell, but we use $1,600 in the study. And that obviously is what spat out the 111% IRR. What's interesting, and I think you've seen this a lot in studies, is quite often you see you look at a gold price used, and you almost look and go, yeah, well, they used that price because it allowed them to back in what IRR they wanted for the project. Well, clearly, we didn't use $1,600 gold to juice the IRR. At $1,400 gold, it's gone 80% IRR. I mean, at $1,250 gold, it's 40%. So we've tried to inform our gold price used by what we believe is a solid discount to consensus forward-looking gold prices. So that's why we came in with 1600 on this one. We'd have been just as happy, or the project stands on its head even at lower gold prices. But yeah, so that was our determination for gold price.
Yeah. Now I just need to follow up real quick on that one. $1,600 used in the PEA versus $1,700 as the base case in the resource. Just to, it's more of a technical question actually. Like, where's that? Well, why that discrepancy? Just help me understand it real quick because I stumbled over it in the.
Yeah, you have a $1,700 pit shell that we've created, but within that there is the resource that we would mine at $1,600 gold. In reality, this is such a homogeneous deposit, doesn't make a huge amount of difference. I think between what the $1,600 pit is and that 1,700, there's a 60 or 70,000 ounce difference. So in reality, this style of this deposit isn't going to make much difference. And if we're lucky and gold price actually cooperates over the coming years, and those consensus gold prices are seen to be accurate or even conservative, there's more gold that falls into this mine plan.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense. And obviously some more exploration about to happen as well. Another question I noted down while reading your PEA press release was, are you using the same mine contractor that you're using at Santana right now? Is that the same company or a different contractor?
We might use a different one, one that's very established in Mexico. We've certainly had conversations with them with regard to Cerro de Oro. That's another area where I think we've been conservative in our costs for this study. I mean, we know what our mining costs are at Santana right now with our current contractor. I mean, we again applied, 15 to 20% above those for this project. Can we get Santana-like prices, or are we being more realistic about future contract prices in Mexico? Either way, I think we could have. There was no need to juice this study. We've clearly it speaks for itself. So whether it be recoveries or our mining costs, they're conservative and certainly are based on real numbers that we're driving from our projects in Mexico already, as opposed to looking at a database that a lot of these consultants do and kind of benchmarking against other things. We understand our costs for building this. If you went to an SRK or an Ausenco, and this isn't a fault of SRK or Ausenco, they just don't look at a build of a project like this the way we do. I mean, we're not building out, the ADR. We have an in-house fabricated carbon plant that we've built. We built it at Santana. We'll build it here. We built it at other mines. I think these projects tend to get Rolls-Royced unnecessarily by some groups, and we're in the business of saving capital, which is more beneficial for our shareholders. So, that's why the funny thing is on this one, Kai, when we first said we were going to build Santana for $10 million, I had a lot of people that would give me these kind of incredulous looks, like, how's that possible? And we did that. In many ways, the real strength of Santana is no, not a single person has questioned our ability to build this, analysts, investors alike, to build this mine for sub $30 million. Because they've just seen what we've done at Santana. And so it was nice that I didn't have to tackle those questions, because people understand how we build, and that we can build with these remarkably low costs.
No, just one thought that went through my head. You should have just hired an SRK just from the marketing budget and then just under-delivered massively, meaning over-delivered by undercutting their budgets. But that's for a later discussion. But another thing that sort of jumped out while reading the PEA release, and again, I don't want to get too technical, but it seems like you're designing the plant and everything, the operation, for about 7 million tons per annum, but you're scheduling in your PEA schedule roughly for 7.5 at its peak. I think it's in year five, I think, or year seven. Sorry, year seven, you're scheduling 7.5. Like, how confident are you that the plant can actually deliver the 7.5? And why are you scheduling over plant design?
Well, I think with our plant, it's modular, right? So it's easy for us to add. I think when Darren built El Castillo, he started with about three sets of carbon columns, and it went to six. I think ultimately went to nine. They're very easy. So the starting design, just like the starting pad space, is only about 400,000 square meters of heap leach pad. And the reason we have sustaining capital of about $2 million a year is that's for largely for pad expansion. It will be no different than the plant. I mean, it's interesting you reference years five through eight, because this is where kind of more of a conventional mine turns into, to some extent, not a bootstrapped approach, but exactly what we want to see in all our operations. Is there that chance for it to expand? So the first 4 years, a higher grade, lower strip, obviously lower cost and a higher production rate. Years five through eight, in relative terms, you know, there's a drop off in production, there's a slight rise in strip. And with those two, obviously as a slight rise in AISC, still obviously very good. But in reality, what we would expect to see with this deposit, if it follows the way El Castillo did, for example, and with the exploration potential that we will be drilling off, even some of it before we break ground, but certainly during those first early years, the deposit will grow. This is going to be a much bigger mine in due course than presented in the PEA, and I think that's where it flows through to those years five through eight in the study.
Gotcha. Okay, so sounds like you're very confident in that as well. So, I got another question for you, and I'm hoping I'm not nitpicking here, but I ran through again. Power was one thing that that you listed also as a separate item here under infrastructure, and you're 2 kilometers away from the grid, but yet you're using grid power plus diesel power, right? I think there are some discussions still going on. Can you give us an update on that? My worry is, and that's where I'm coming from, is I don't want to be hit with an extra capex, let's say of $1 million or $2 million for building a power line or extra like substation or something as well, just to factor that in.
Really?
With a capex of $22 million, you know, like without contingency,
you know, oh my 10%. Goodness, we're going to spend $2 million giving ourselves grid power. Like that would be phenomenal. You know, imagine those companies in the Yukon right now wondering about how they got to power things. I mean, and that's, you know, there are always workarounds to that, but I'm sorry to laugh, but I mean, I think it's fantastic that we're right by paved road, we're right by the grid. So to hook up a project to the grid, which we can't say we're going to do because those discussions have to go on. If there's a $2 million added capex in one particular year onto our sustaining capital, so we go from $2 to $4 million, and we've taken advantage of grid power as a result. You know, that's a trade-off I do all the time, especially with a project that can kick off, you know, close to $30 million of free cash flow a year. I absolutely would take that trade-off anytime. It's the benefit here is we have it as an option, Kai, as opposed to being out in the middle of nowhere where you are forever on diesel. So no, I think it adds another element, which is really important when you're looking at how this project can scale over time, where certainly you'd probably want to be on the grid. Well, thank goodness it's just over there, right?
Yeah. No, fantastic. You mentioned it'll be part of the sustaining capex. It sounds like it's not going to be ready for year one. So that's a project for later on. So, yeah. Okay. No, my I'm just wondering if it was part of the 28 million or not, and if that's a factor in there.
No. If anything, it would flow into sustaining capital. And I correct myself, potentially they might have already been factored in there, but because I don't believe it has, because those discussions haven't been fully had to determine if there's sufficient capacity on that local grid for what we need. And obviously we don't have huge electrical capacity requirements, because we're really talking about some minor crushing, a carbon plant, some pumps from the ponds. It's not like we're running a big 5,000 ton a day mill there that, you know, would be much more problematic. And I think it's another area where we like the simplicity of open pit heap leach in a world where electrical energy prices are obviously very much at the forefront of people's minds right now.
Yeah. While you were just chatting, I actually peeked at the capex table, and substation miscellaneous power is already included with 2 million. So maybe that's where the 2 million number from as well, subconsciously. No, fantastic. We got two more topics to cover. One is permitting, and the other one is financing, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we stand on permitting? I understand you got the surface rights now. Do you need to complete some more studies to get to the next step, or like, what's the timeline on permitting?
We're just wrapping up some field surveys that have to be done post receipt of those surface rights. They couldn't be done beforehand because you actually need the surface rights to be out there doing that. So the goal, chatting with Darren the other day, is, you know, our expectation is before year end, and we'll get the the permit application submitted. Everything else has been done. Everything else has been done for quite some time, in fact. So we're just waiting to augment the applications with this last. It's flora, fauna type surveys, you know, what types of cactus are out there and stuff like that. And we've already actually in a mine plan ahead of those surveys created nursery space where there's transplanting of things should they come up. So that's what I love about the team. They're always thinking ahead of those kinds of areas. So with those in, I mean, you know, I hate to put solid guidance on something which is out of our hands, but our experience in Mexico would be, you know, roughly 9 to 10 months on receipt of your MIA, your environmental permit there. And the MIA ETJ is what allows you to basically construct, do everything but start mining. So we will hope that we're breaking ground in Q4 of next year. It's about a 5 to 6 month construction time, especially if we do some prefabrication of plants and stuff like that. So about 5 to 6 month construction time. So starting up kind of later in the first half of 2024 is my guess. And unfortunately, those kinds of timelines, you know, our guesses, but we're pretty comfortable with our track record of getting permits in a timely manner in Mexico. And so have no reason to think that Cerro Oro is going to be any different whatsoever.
No, fantastic. I'm making an assumption here, but I'm assuming you're not going to pursue financing until you have permits in hand. But the reason I'm asking is I've read the Haywood report, and they're assuming in their model that you mostly will use equity to finance the build of the mine, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I'm guessing it's going to be mostly debt. And the other question is, of course, how much debt do you think you will have to take on? Because you just mentioned in a CO.ca chat that you roughly have about $24 million working capital. So just
well, that
curious.
Was what an analyst did. I have
no,
to be
I was
always
quoting
careful
directly
about
from,
that. But
from the CEO.
Yeah, I quoted an analyst saying we got about 24 million in working capital. I don't think that's a knock on that particular analyst with them calling for or modeling equity. You tend to see analysts typically model a bunch of equity in their analysis. However, you know, if you know, clearly he's got better things to do than see a lot of interviews I've done over the last year. I mean, our goal was always to start up debt free with Santana because it opens up the ability to debt finance. We were looking before Cerro de Oro was acquired at building La Fortuna next. That we got indicative terms for largely, you know, 100% build of that was going to be non-equity. I very much anticipate that's exactly the same approach we'll take for Cerro de Oro and take advantage of the fact we're debt-free to lever up and take some debt on. And when you think about the payback of this project, it's hardly long-term debt. It will pay back inside of a year. You know, it's really a bridge more than anything else. That gives us actually a lot more flexibility in maybe taking money which is slightly higher cost of capital, but doesn't have some of the debt covenants and other unnecessary things from our perspective, which are very necessary for the lender, because the payback terms are so quick on it that it gives us a lot of flexibility in that regard. So no, I very much expect Cerro de Oro to be largely debt funded. I also believe that it's in our interest to communicate that to the market in a way where well in advance of permits being received, I would like to have a funding package out there in place so the market can see how we're going to fund it, obviously with the condition precedent that we receive permits before we can draw down from it. So I'm already starting those conversations now. I'd like to address them in the market's eyes in the first half of next year so that there is no question of people waking up one morning to see that we've proven that analyst right and there's some big equity raise to build Cerro de Oro. It makes zero sense.
No, absolutely. No, I fully agree with your clean balance sheet. Why would you dilute? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And you're a big shoulder yourself. Fantastic. Doug, I think we need to wrap it up here at this point. Maybe just one last question. What are next steps? What can be some of the next news items that we can expect from the company?
Oh, I mean, actually, it's a pivot back at some point in the before year end. And hopefully, we spent a lot of time getting this report out, but we've got the maiden resource for Santana to come out. That's important as operations there continue to ramp up. And I think on a quarter by quarter basis, we're showing growth in production there whilst maintaining a cost structure, which is enviable against the current market trends at the op cost level. So, you know, I think we've had a good Q3 with the rains that came. Those rains actually will I think make for a better Q4 because you almost have too much rain at times, so you get solution dilution and everything else. And yet, despite all that, we had made a lot of progress in Q3, I believe. And so the Santana resource is about demonstrating the first 5-6 years of life of that operation. It's not meant to be huge. It's meant to give the market confidence that what we are doing and what at some point we will declare as commercial at Santana is supportable for the next 5-6 years. And really, during a time where we ramp up Cerro de Oro and Fortuna and other things we're looking at, Santana is this fantastic foundation that has opened up our ability to build a bigger operation, taking on debt, has been proof of concept for the market, and actually has driven a lot of cash generation as well, which is very important in a business where, you know, isn't that what we're all about? It's not just producing gold, it's actually producing money at the bottom when it comes to the balance sheet. So I think we've been doing that consistently this year and I expect that to continue.
Fantastic. Let's catch up as soon as the next quarterly numbers come out. Love to catch up. Lots more questions, of course, about financing terms, what the environment is out there right now, what the mood and appetite for debt financing is as well. I'm sure people are quite hungry for more to take on more debt or actually give you debt financing. So fantastic. Doug, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate coming on and thanks for humoring my questions. So much appreciated. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kai.
And everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. This was an SF Live episode with Doug Ramshaw, president of Minera Alamos, and we caught up on the PA. I asked some more detailed questions in this interview. If you want to follow up and you want more baseline questions or more of a general overview of the PA, my colleague and good friend Trevor Hall did a fantastic interview with Doug Ramshaw yesterday. It's on the miningstockdaily.com, and go check that out as well to have a comprehensive view of the PA there that out. Really appreciate you tuning in. Follow us on YouTube, follow us on Twitter, hit that like and subscribe button, and leave a comment. Thanks so much. We'll be back with more soon.